Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Craft Beer Republic. Just Greg here today on a field trip. I'm out in Fillmore at Red Engine Brewing Company, who just had their grand opening by the time this airs a couple weeks ago. I am being joined by the founder, sort of builder, the brewmaster, the funder. What else
Toilet
did you do?
Toilet boy, washer,
plumber.
Like, yeah, you name it.
Painter.
It's happening. Like, yeah.
Preston Andrini. Did I say that right?
Mm-hmm. You did. Nailed it.
Thanks for coming out, man.
Yeah, thanks for...
Yeah, I'm very excited. We talked about on the show that a few weeks back, you guys had industry night. Mm-hmm. We were honored to be invited. We showed up and we were pleasantly surprised that a brewery that just opened had so many good beers already.
Oh, thank you so much,
man. I mean, usually it takes 6 months or so to dial your stuff in and... maybe you've had 6 months to dial your stuff
for
in.
Sure. Yeah, 6 months has been like, yeah, recent. We've been working on... fortunately, like we've had a couple friends that we've been able to like brew beers at their places and put them on at their places and get a little bit of like feedback and do some beer festivals and stuff like that and get some feedback. And that's definitely helped like make some corrections for us so we could hit it off here, you know, as good as it would let us.
Did you get a lot of like haze boy feedback at the festivals? Like, hey, bro,
you know, so
not hazy enough.
So here's the deal with the festivals. At least this is like... what I've on the serving side, like what I've realized the pattern is there's hop heads, right? They're like, I want to smell it from a mile away.
Yeah.
I don't want to see through it.
Right.
I want it to be near 8%.
Juicy as can be.
And then there's the complete opposite is like, I don't want anything bitter. Like give me the lowest ABV lager that you have. And those are basically the two folks.
Right.
That at least are the most vocal, like at these beer festivals.
I think the third group is like those guys in their mid 40s who came up on like Stone IPA and are like, I want you to rip the enamel off my off my teeth. If I can see through it, it's good. This is hazy. This is bullshit. You know, those are always my favorite.
We do have that here a little bit and we had at the brewery. But usually at the festivals, like folks are trying to. There's maybe like two types of folks. Like people are like, hey, I want to try to drink everything here.
Right.
So I'm going to take
it.
I'm going to take it. Or yeah, even the opposite of that. Like I'm going to take it as a challenge. Or people who are just trying to survive the day and they know they have a hill to climb. So they're like, oh, only fill the taster up halfway.
Yeah.
Again, but it's like the lager and IPA like people that I see like, you know, are populating those festivals.
I think you really, and I've poured for different breweries for a few different festivals, I think you really find out like which people are which the last hour, because those are the people who are like, I'll take anything in my glass. I'm just trying to keep this buzz going. Or you got the people who are still like, oh man, you ran out of the lager? Shit, that's too bad. So that really is like that line in the sand, I think, that last hour. Like, keep piling it on. What do you mean you can't serve me anymore?
Yeah, and we're just hoping to like run out so the kegs aren't as heavy,
right,
like taking it back to the truck, you know?
That's always my favorite. It's like, hey guys, 15 minutes left, stop serving. Like, yeah, no problem. They're not pouring over here on the side. I remember one brewery was like, we can't serve you anymore, but I'm not physically going to stop you from coming over here and pouring this tap handle because I'm not allowed to touch the guests.
I get it.
He's like, and I don't want full kegs to go back with.
Yeah.
Anyways, all right, enough about beer festivals. So like we were saying, we're going to find out about Red Engine Brewing. We're going to find out about Preston and his background, story of all of this, everything in between. Before we get into that, let's break some ice. Let's start with the beer.
Okay. Yeah, which one? You pick.
All right,
we do have a flight in front of us for folks that like can't see it.
And there'll be pictures on the gram
but,
and everything.
Let's just start it off with the Java Bump.
Let's do it.
It's closest to you.
May I?
Yeah, please.
Tell us about Java Bump. By the way, industry night a few weeks ago. This was my favorite beer of the night.
I actually made this beer for the first time in my garage. And the concept was like behind like for a period of time, there was like a white stout kind of phase where people were doing similar things.
I love that phase.
Yep. So this is our continuation of it. But it's a base blonde and the hop is Cascade. It's really low ABV. Like I made it with cold brew coffee.
Okay.
So it did change the color of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I made it. In its current format, which is like a whole bean, where it still looks golden and it has that like coffee aroma and coffee flavor for sure.
Do you like dry hop it, for lack of a better term, on beans?
That's exactly how this is made. It's the whole beans go in the fermenter. after it's fermented out, and we do a similar like 3 days prior to kegging or canning it.
Yeah.
I think we use like 18 pounds of coffee.
Total or per barrel?
For 15 barrels. So it's a little over a pound a barrel.
Okay. So not the cheapest beer you'll ever make.
No. No. I mean, it's not cheaper than just the blonde by itself for right. sure. But I think it gives it that dimension. It's like the value's there. Mm-hmm. And then we partnered with Ragamuffin Roastery and out of like Newberry and Oxnard. They have some locations, and the guys over there were super solid. As we kind of mentioned before, like the record button got hit.
Right.
We went over there, did a cupping, and drank way too much coffee that day, and were, you know, walked out of there like levitating. It was a lot of caffeine, but learned a lot about coffee.
Yeah.
And this varietal is called Pacas, and it's out of South America. Mm. And it's a light roast, light, like barely touching medium roast. And they just got this varietal like out of a farm down there that they do business with.
Okay.
It's a new varietal for the farm. It's a new varietal for them. And it was delicious, like in it's the coffee format.
Yeah.
And so we did some, I brought over our blonde, and we took coffee and just kind of put it in
different,
yeah, in different increments, and kind of like did a little raw. And we're like, okay, I think this is kind of in the wheelhouse, and we'll see how it goes on the big system.
Yeah. Well, it's great. You get so much coffee up front, coffee on the nose. And we were joking beforehand, like, this is the ultimate breakfast beer.
Yeah. Like, this is like legit breakfast beer.
What's ABV on it?
5%.
So perfect. Right in that low, sessionable breakfast.
Yeah, you can
beer.
Have a couple of these, mm-hmm. you know, just like a couple cups of coffee.
Yeah.
I think we should probably pair it with a breakfast burrito here or something like that.
Or breakfast pizza.
Could you imagine?
Just like bacon and
maybe, my God, what's that called with the chips? Chili Killies?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, stop it.
We're going to have to hit pause on this. Yeah. Can we go hit the kitchen real quick? You got any chips back there?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is phenomenal. I love coffee beers. It's no secret on this show. Really, really good.
Like, my favorite thing about it is we'll have folks that come in and they'll see the coffee beer on the menu or the descriptor, and they'll expect it to be dark. And then it comes out, you know, golden and transparent, and people are thinking, I think it's a little bit more approachable. People drink with their eyes a lot.
Yeah.
And so like just the way it is, looks in the glass, it's definitely approachable. And then they might want something that's dark. And then we have like our stout to kind of like point them in the other direction, which we'll get to here, maybe next or whatever. But
sure, yeah.
The future iteration of this beer might involve some vanilla.
Oh.
A little like cafe con leche vibe or something like
maybe
that.
Maybe like a little lactose in there.
Maybe, you know, nitro.
Nitro.
There's a lot of.
Then you don't have to deal with the lactose.
There's a lot of stuff that I think there's a lot more fun to be had with this beer.
Yeah, that would be fun. Does any of the caffeine come through into the beer?
So there is trace caffeine.
Okay.
I couldn't give you the milligrams right now, but a friend of mine who makes a similar beer did send it out to a lab, and there is some trace caffeine.
But not like...
It's very low.
We're not talking cup of coffee or anything
no,
like that.
No, nothing close.
Okay.
Nothing close.
Too bad.
Yeah. I'd be worried more about the alcohol than the caffeine, you know?
Fair enough. Before we get into the brewery, let's talk about you. You're a captain of the Ventura City Fire Department. Still. Not like was, but like...
No.
In fact,
I got off this morning like 3 hours ago.
Yeah. You're insane. So first of all, thank you for your service.
Yep. You're welcome.
That's awesome. And are you nuts?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Full-time firefighter, full-time brewer/owner.
Mm-hmm. Dad, husband, like...
Your wife must love it.
Hates it.
Yeah.
I mean, I would say like, you know, my social life is zero at this point. Uh-huh. Like if you come into the brewery and say hi to me, that's my social life.
Right.
At this point, but you know, I asked for it, and I'm down to grind. I like being busy. The fire department is full of people just who love being busy, and you know, I'm definitely one of those folks at the department. And then here at the brewery, it's like, yeah, let's get down, like let's make it better, let's push the project forward, let's have a good time,
let's work a bunch.
Yeah.
Tell us about the name. So Red Engine Brewing, obviously it ties to the fire department, but what does it mean to you? Like, why the name?
Well, first of all, I don't know how many names we went through, but I'll approach this question from two angles. One was, I was reading a book, How to Open a Brewery. It was by the gentleman that owns Elysian.
Oh, okay.
I can't remember his name right now.
Yeah. Well, now it's Budweiser, but
okay. But that gentleman wrote a book, And in the book, it talks about naming, like, you know, how to pick a name. Yeah. Like, what things should you be looking for in a name? And how should people receive it, and et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one of the things, they said basically there was like three ways to pick a name. One was you name it after the area or the region.
Sure.
Okay, so so many people do that. And that's like the number one way to do it.
Right, it's easy.
Lots of things you get buy-in from the community or people from that area, or yeah, who like are relating to the area, vacationing in the area, you know, like what. So there's a lot of buy-in you can get with like a name that's about a river, a mountain range, or an area of the state street name. Yeah, all those things. So that was really cool. That was a good option. We definitely explored it. And then people had there were some counter arguments to it. Like, hey, if you take your beer outside of the area and people don't know the name, right, don't know, like, you know, the name of that mountain range, it might not make sense, or they might not have a way to tie into it.
Yeah. So people in Arizona aren't going to connect to insert name here from small city.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. So, you know, it's good and bad, but it's a way to name your place. And then the other one was like, name it after yourself. So like your family name, sure, or a name that, you know, represents you somehow, you know, that kind of is part of our name.
Okay.
And the last one was like just something that defines you. So however you're defining your business or your person or your the brewery, like just something that you want to define the name. So we took all that into consideration, and then I came up with about 100 stupid ideas that my wife properly just shot down.
Right.
And I would send her 5 to 10 things a day. Like, hey, how about this? And I'm like, oh, this is going to be it. This is the one. I would send it. No, it just crushed me for weeks.
Uh-huh.
One day I send her this thing, Red Engine Brewing Company. And she's like, that's it. And that was it. The conversation was over. We checked the box. It was right on to like design. Like what would it look like? Obviously it's red.
Yeah.
And then that's kind of the next thing I'll go into. Like one of the things that was important to me with my background in the fire department was like bringing a little bit of that here. Like our tagline is like product of tradition. So the fire department has hundreds of years of mm-hmm. tradition impeding progress. You know, like there's all sorts of jokes about it, but yeah, there is a lot of tradition that to this day happened, you know, 50 years ago or 5 years ago for that matter, or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's ongoing. It's not going to change. And beer brewing is like really similar. There's lots of traditional ways to make beer, and it might not even be called, you know, said beer if it's not made like that.
Right,
like
yeah,
if it's not with a decoction mash or
right,
certain hops from the region, like, do you want to call it that if it, you know, if it doesn't have those ingredients? So there's a lot of like similarities there. But I always describe our brand as like a fire engine. So it's big. You can't miss it.
Yeah.
It's capable. Like the fire department does not call anybody else for help.
Yeah. You're the last option.
They're capable.
Yeah.
And it's trustworthy, mm-hmm, which you expect to see when you call them into your home at night. You've never met any of these people. They come in the door like they own the place,
right,
and they handle business.
Right.
They make the problem go away, as they should. And that's the expectation. So they're capable. And then the last one is, it's obviously red. It's in the name.
Yeah.
So that's our brand and the name. I don't know if I hopefully answered the question like completely enough, but how we got there.
And going back to your hundreds of names, and you said your wife decided on one, you guys started planning it out and everything. People should know she's a graphic designer.
Yeah. Elizabeth has a bachelor in digital, yeah, like graphic design.
Yeah. And you can see it on the menus. The digital menus are all designed by her and they look great.
Yeah. Despite hours of fighting against her on some of these things. Like I didn't even want to name the beers. I just wanted it to be like Blonde Ale. That's it.
And yeah.
She's, no, because there wasn't enough design involved, right, in the decision, you know? So like, yeah, all aspects. She's definitely had a huge influence, you know, on definitely the way the place looks.
Yeah.
Like, and the way the word marks look and the names and everything.
Yeah, she did a great job. And my wife can attest to the same thing. I've sent her hundreds of podcast names and even like episode titles. Sometimes I'm trying to mm-hmm. be cute and I'll send her all these options. She's like, nobody's gonna know what the fuck you're talking about. Like just name it what it is. And all right, fine.
So, you need that person though, yeah, like in your
somebody
team.
Somebody needs to shit on your dreams.
Oh.
You need that dream.
Big
shitter,
hot steamy one. Yeah. Like just like no, under no circumstances will you right. be doing that. Like, zero.
Let me tell you how dumb you sound yeah. right now. Yeah, we get that a lot.
It's good. It's good though.
Yeah, you need it.
Good filter.
A few weeks ago, you guys had your official grand opening.
Mm-hmm.
How has the reception been from the community?
So Man, I have so many good things to say about our community. Like, people have been reaching out, offering help, services, I'm not an expert on a lot of things. So sure. It's been helpful to have people like come in the door unplanned and like take a piece of time or work, like, you know, and run with it and like probably do it better than I would have done it to begin with. So the community has been awesome. And we've gotten quite a bit of like people from outside, you know, Santa Clarita, Ventura, Moore Park, Thousand Oaks. I've been like making a little drive over the hill.
Yeah. A little bit of a commitment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. To Fillmore. And so we're like 20 minutes away from pretty much anything else,
yeah.
Which isn't too far, but sometimes it's definitely farther than 5 minutes. Right. So if your option's 5 or 20, you know, like, I appreciate the people who decided on the 20.
Yeah.
We've had great reception from the community, like locally. And there's no other brewery in Fillmore currently. So
yeah, competition's low,
but we're new. So educating, like, some of the consumers coming in here have an expectation of, I don't know, it could be lots of other things, but there's not a brewery here to like compare to. Like, you go to Ventura.
Everywhere.
Yeah, there's 10 little, or 11.
Yeah, a little mini San Diego.
So everyone knows what a brewery is in Ventura. There's zero education going on there. Like, the consumer is very intelligent.
And they all have their favorites, and they know what to expect.
They know exactly what to expect.
Yeah.
So here we're surprising some people, you know, with the experience and with the offerings, and then educating the rest of the group.
And is it true that you made your own tables?
It is.
Speaking of opening.
Yeah. If you've been following us for the last couple of years, thank you. It's been a little bit of time. It's been 2 years since we got the building.
I remember first seeing you on the gram. You had like 2 posts, and I was like, oh, a new brewery coming in.
Yeah, check these guys out. Yeah. And 2 years later,
here we are.
Finally got some beer out of this
place.
But
you did it.
We did it.
Yeah.
Huge, like, just getting over the finish line with this project was like huge accomplishment for me and for like everybody involved, you know, like, definitely one of the biggest mountains we've climbed, like, with the most aggravating of problems.
Well, you're the first one here. You're basically setting all the laws around it.
Yeah, the city had a lot of questions for us too. Mm-hmm. Like, well, what are you going to do with the grain when you're done? You know,
what's going to go down the drain?
That was a big one.
Yeah,
what's going to go down the drain? It's like nothing. Right. No, that wasn't what
water.
You said, but yeah, you know, obviously didn't want certain things, you know, interrupting the water.
Right.
The water department didn't want certain things like affecting their operation.
Sure.
And so as long as that didn't happen and we were playing within the rules and pHs were good, it was like, okay, continue.
One of the things you were saying before we started was like, not only did you guys make your own tables and you're insane and you drove up to Paso and cut all the trees down, but like, you were also, if the construction crew was down a guy, you were just calling friends and coming in and swinging hammers.
So let me touch on the tables really quick, because a lot of guys put some time into that and would love the credit, but as they deserve. So I was in a rabbit hole one night on these epoxy tables on YouTube, and it was like, I think we could do this. You know, I think this would be something unique.
Yeah.
That people would like enjoy, you know, drinking or eating on or conversating on. And it might even be like something that comes up in their evening where they're talking about how cool the table is or the environment, you know, I mean, adds to the experience a little bit. And so I had this great idea. I didn't run by my wife, and I was like, hey, we're going to make our own tables. We're going to cut the trees down. We're going to take them to a sawmill and slab them out. We're going to kiln and dry them. And then we're going to bring them back here and pour however many gallons of epoxy we poured into these things. It was like an endless amount.
How hard could it be?
That's what I thought. It took us like a year to build these things.
Holy shit.
Yeah. And then we welded the table frames too. Some good friends and neighbors, like welders, and they helped us put the, and I don't know if you noticed it, but if you look at the side of the tables, it looks like a pint glass.
Oh.
And that was like part of the design on each end. It looks like a pint glass. So it's like, you know, little, like, you know, the devil's in the details a lot. I'm proud of them. They're definitely a unique piece. You can't buy it. So they weigh like 500 pounds. So you can't steal it either. I mean, it's not going anywhere. Yeah, the tables were a huge part, our contribution, you know, to what you see when you come in here.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm so thankful that I have like a group of people to pull from at the fire department that usually are handy folks.
Sure.
And they're able to, like, you know, as long as I had cold beer and lunch available, these guys would come in here and hammer it.
Yeah. Worth it.
I'm so thankful for them, for all the hours that they've, like, you know, donated.
Yeah. Well, you said you guys installed, like, most of the brew equipment yourself.
Oh, man. So,
like, crazy people. Yeah.
So
it's not a small brew house, everybody.
Yeah. So if you, so you're here, you can see it. Yeah. So all that came through the front door, which is like, you look at the front door right now and you're like, there's zero possibility that any of that fits through the front door. Well, when it comes out of the truck, it's all laying down.
Sure.
So that's definitely better, like it laying down. But then when you get in here, you got to pick it up. And not all of it is, it's not light duty stuff.
Right.
It's big, it's heavy. You definitely don't want to drop it. That's not going to go well. But there's a specialty in the fire department called Urban Search and Rescue.
Sure.
It's like useful stacking and restacking is like kind of the joke acronym, but
real
it's
life
like
Tetris.
Yeah, but it is really. But a lot of it is like with really heavy pieces. Usually it's like delayering a building that's fallen down.
Oh, okay.
And so you're delayering it and you're lifting up slabs of concrete or rebar or cars.
Jeez.
And you're looking for victims.
Yeah.
And you're using all sorts of like technology, search cameras and sonar devices and stuff like that to decide where or which pieces are going to get removed.
Okay.
Obviously, those guys were my first call. Like, I'm part of that team as well. And I was like, okay, I need a skill. I need guys who can take this stuff out, operate cranes, understand weight distribution, loads.
Yeah.
And, you know, hopefully not drop any of this stuff that we've just spent like quite a bit of coin on. Guys nailed it, man. They came in here and
I don't see any dents.
Nope. Yeah. Nothing touched the ground. It was really incredible. But it all came through the front door and made it in safe.
That's pretty good. And it looks great too. Nice and shiny and dent-free.
Dent-free, most importantly.
Yeah. Well, speaking of brew house, let's check out another beer.
All right. So this next beer is most likely our American Light Lager. It's called First In. 4.6%, 12 IBUs. This is our crushable river beer, light bodied. I mean, you could probably drink six of these.
Challenge accepted.
Yeah. A cool thing about this beer is the gentleman's name who we got the brew house through, his name's Josh. Mm-hmm. He's a brewer himself. And he has a little side hustle of buying and selling and designing breweries and brewery equipment.
It's a fun side hustle.
I know. I know. He's a great guy too. So we're going over, I'm, you know, kind of consulting with him like on a light lager.
Mm-hmm.
And so we come up with this recipe and we end up using an enzyme to really dry the beer out all the way. So we use like a 3470, I think.
Okay.
Lager yeast in addition to this enzyme. And this thing finished under one. So it's like 0.914, something like that on the gravity, which is extremely dry.
Yeah.
And even though we only put in like enough hops for whatever it is, like the 12 IBUs, I think it accentuates a little bit of the hop or bitterness flavor a little bit more with that mm-hmm. enzyme product. But fun beer to make. It was a little bit of an experiment with the enzyme, but I'm happy with where it's come out.
Yeah, absolute crusher. I mean, fucking boat beer to a
this
tea.
Is, yeah. It's a cooler, a wake setter, and like a hot day on the river, and this is it,
yeah. I mean, it's classic. You do get a little, I don't get so much like accentuated hop flavor, but more just like that bitterness
on the
finish, little, you know, pininess, I guess.
Yeah.
Whatever.
100%.
But yeah, but not to all you not hop lovers, not hoppy.
Yeah. Yeah.
At all. You just get a hint of bitter on the end there. Absolute crusher. Very nice. What was it? 4.2.
Hold on. 4.6.
4.6.
I'm looking at the wrong data.
Either way, you could have like 30 of these and live.
Yeah, you're going to see another day for sure. Yeah,
exactly.
For sure.
Talked about the building and the process a little bit. How did you decide on this spot?
Oh, good question.
And what was the spot? It looks like it might have been like a grocery store.
Yeah, it was a dollar. It was like a Family Dollar store, like the chain Family Dollar.
Okay.
So I live in Fillmore.
Okay.
We were looking everywhere except for here. And nothing against the town. It was just kind of the availability of commercial property.
Yeah.
It was kind of like the main reason to look elsewhere. There's just more options elsewhere. And we were doing the typical thing where it was like three blocks off the main drag, commercial, tilt up, tall. You know, we had like a wish list of things. It was like, well, we want good bones. We want it to be tall. We want the electricity to be, you know, at least three phase.
Right.
We want gas. We want, you know, we had like a wish list. We were shopping mainly in Santa Clarita.
Okay.
A little bit like into like San Fernando Valley, but that the drive there was looking like you can't do this every day.
Yeah.
Like it's not going to be sustainable. But we were looking in Santa Clarita, Ventura, Thousand Oaks, Newberry, pretty much anywhere in Ventura County was like fair game for us. And we had our wish list. And then Elizabeth was like, why don't you check out that building? Like, it's right here. It's like in a mile away. Like, why don't you go check that out?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, you know. And then
it's a grocery store. You're being stupid.
Yeah. And then it ended up being like, so we changed our perspective on like to more, why wouldn't it work here or at that location? And so I looked up some data on the, like the Brewers Association. These numbers are across the country too, so it's not specific to California, which has its own like twist and flavor on pretty much anything.
Yeah.
On average, like 10,000 people can support a brewery.
Okay.
That's what the data says. So then you look at somewhere like Ventura, like which we've already talked about. Mm. It's got 10 breweries, 11 breweries. It's got 110,000 people. Okay.
So kind of maxed.
Well, I mean, it's... So then there's places like Portland, Maine that have... I think Portland, Maine has the highest concentration of breweries per person in the town. And it's like a ridiculous... It's a ridiculous number. I don't remember it right now, but it was so far above anything that I knew about.
Yeah.
And I was like, are you sure the numbers are right on that? And it's like, that's what they are. So they're killing it there. That's great. You know, obviously people are drinking beer there. People are traveling there and drinking beer. It's working for them.
Yeah.
But then I looked at Fillmore. I was like, well, there's 18,000 people here and no breweries. Like, wait a minute. I could do the math there. Yeah. Like that, we should be able to survive according to the Brewers Association, which isn't everything, but.
Sure. It's a good starting point.
Yeah. Like they know something about beer.
Yeah.
So I'll take their word for it. And then really funny because the building had, it was not for rent, like, you know, Zillow or LoopNet. Some other like commercial real estate apps and websites that will show you what's available, you know?
Yeah.
And it wasn't listed. And then I came to the building, drove around it. There's like no information on the building.
Weird.
Right? And it's empty. And so I tell Elizabeth, I'm like, you know, it's not, I don't think it's for rent.
Not for
like,
sale.
Yeah, whatever. I end up asking like a local real estate agent buddy. I'm like, do you know who like owns this place or how do we get contact info? There's nothing on it.
Yeah.
And he ends up calling some friends of friends. And we end up getting the landlord contacted and call him. Ends up being a great guy. And we're like, can we do this or what? Answer's yes. It's like,
sweet.
Let's go.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So that's a little bit of the story on like how we ended up here.
Yeah. And it's on the main drag in town. And
yeah.
You're across the street from Taco Bell.
Clutch. Prior to our kitchen.
Yeah.
Clutch. Yeah. That was like, you know, visibility.
Yeah.
How are people going to know about us? Like, how are they going to find us? It was like, don't make it too hard.
Right.
And there were some locations. It was like, okay, we're, you know, we're the third building back after the cul-de-sac. Like you can't miss it. It's like, you could miss it. Like
14
easily.
Cannons.
Yeah.
Yeah. Find the right little strip of warehouses, third left, make sure you scratch your chin. Yeah. And then speaking of like the build out and all this stuff, while you were planning and then building, you started the Built and Brewed podcast.
Yeah.
Which is not officially over.
It's not over.
Okay, good.
It's on a little hiatus. I listen to, I'm sure like every brewer, brewery owner or like people who work at like, you know, a lot of information that you can take in while you're driving or passively like in your headphones while you're on a run or something like that. Podcasts, like that's it, right? That's probably, I think it's actually one of the like largest growing media.
It's huge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the trajectory's up, right?
Yeah.
So I was listening to a bunch of beer podcasts about how to do this because do not confuse me with like a professional. Like I do not know a lot of things.
Like I can put out a fire.
Yeah. I can now that, yeah, not that we can check the box professional, but I have like 20 years in that arena to know most of what's going on.
Right.
But, here I don't. And so podcasts were like a huge source. You know, I had bought a couple books on subjects that I was like, you know, interested in that I wanted to reference.
Sure.
But podcasts were really like one of the main sources. So I just felt like giving back to that, the built and brewed, like in the title, it's like the first 10 episodes are all about building it. Like, who are you going to need to contact? Your lawyer, your architect, your engineers, you know, all these key players.
Mm-hmm. You even get into marketing.
Marketing, yeah.
Yeah.
Business planning.
Mm-hmm.
That was probably, I don't know, like 8 to 12 months of my life.
Sure.
Have I ever written a business plan before? No.
Yeah.
No. I am proud of what we have, though.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
But podcast, man. It was, so anyways, I'm just like, put energy back into the system. I sucked out like an incredible amount and I'm just trying to put some back in.
Well, and there's always something to be said about learning from someone who knows nothing about that space, who's actually doing it at that point, because like an expert could tell you, oh, it's so easy to do X, Y, and Z, but you're like, I don't know what the hell you just said. Like, that means nothing to me. Might as well speak in another language. But you're able to break it down into sort of layman's terms because you're a layman at this point. You know, you haven't been doing it for years. You haven't opened five breweries or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I listened to, I think, all or most of the episodes, and content wise, like really, really interesting. If you're going to start a brewery, I think it's a great place to start.
Yeah. It's definitely not the end all be all, but it's like some good reference points.
Mm-hmm.
And then like anybody, all of the guests are the people we used.
Yeah.
To build this project.
Yeah. And low key, you kind of get your name out there before you're open.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a good way to like get to know our brand or whatever. Like, yeah, absolutely.
What would you say like the biggest one or two things that you were surprised that you learned during the whole process?
Man, how much time do we have on the show?
Start the timer.
Yeah. Number one thing is definitely time. Like if you can manage your time and then the project's time and just become efficient at that, you're going to be miles ahead. But what happened to me was I didn't understand how long it would take to do things. And then I just ended up at double the time, finally wrapping up the item. And it was like, it was just incredible how long stuff took. And it wasn't anybody's fault. It wasn't like people were dragging their feet or whatever. It was just that an experienced person would probably be able to tell you, oh, that project's going to take 6 weeks. And so the key is really just layering stuff because you're not going from, it's not linear. You're not going from one like A to B to C to D. You're doing like A through M at the same time. And hopefully stuff lands.
And you got A.1 and A.2 before you can even get to B and C. And
I mean, we had these whiteboards. We had these three whiteboards up when we were doing construction. It was like contractor jobs, Preston's jobs. And whatever other
like Ocean's 11.
Yeah, it was like the war, like we call them war boards in the fire department. It's like, this is what you have to accomplish right now. And it's like, you know, just there's not enough room on the board, basically. Right. That's what it comes down to. So time was definitely a huge lesson.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would say the other lesson is really like how you, the dreamer, the entrepreneur, how you can manage yourself. I don't want to get too into this, but I had like this last year was like not the easiest year of my life. Like for sure, this was the most challenging year of my life. And there were some points where you're like, you got to lie to yourself. You got to tell yourself that you're going to be able to do it.
Right.
And you don't know how to do it. You don't know when you're going to be able to do it. And you just say like, I think I could do this. And you just lie to yourself.
Fake it till you make it.
Yeah. And then one day like something will click and the task gets done.
Sure.
But that's definitely the two things are managing yourself, like your mental space, like remaining positive, remaining organized, staying on task, and then time. And maybe they're like, maybe this is like a web we're weaving together here, but if your life is not in order before you take on this project, I don't want to burst the bubble, but your life is not going to be in order, man. Easier. At the end of this thing, you're going to be a shit show.
And you know, we talked to your wife Elizabeth at industry night, and we were talking about the TVs and how you did not want the TVs.
Yeah, well, I didn't want half of this shit. But
and she's like, you have to have two because they're not TVs for games; they're the menu and digital menus and stuff. And how we were telling her how good they looked. But knowing what you know now, you're open. You're selling beer. You're selling pizza. Is there one thing you would have done differently
with the whole project?
Yeah, different layout, different tables. I wouldn't have gone up and built my own stupid tables and killed myself.
Probably would have let that one go, maybe, but no. We had a good time doing it.
Yeah. Is there one thing you're like, shit, I wish I would have X. Now I know what I know.
Well, I definitely wish I would have managed time better.
Okay.
You know?
It's fair.
we didn't do the best job there. Here we go. We have a kitchen.
Right.
Where I don't know what the menu is going to be like in 2, 3, 10 years. I don't know what it's going to be.
Sure.
And we might be, you know, doing some real fucking hipster shit out of there. Like, we might be. I don't know if the kitchen's going to get there, if we're going to have folks in there that have that level of talent or expertise, or even if the equipment's going to exist.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. But if you don't know anything about a kitchen, don't do it. Because I about killed myself just like trying to figure out the kitchen. The workflow, I don't know how many times the equipment's been rearranged in there. We've added an outlet because, you know, I thought it would be better over. We need the mixer over here. Sure. And then, you know, we get the outlet over here. And then it's like, who put the mixer over here? Like, that doesn't make any sense. And it's like,
just have a kitchen riddled with outlets now.
Yeah. Yeah. All kinds of. I mean, yeah. Now it's like, actually now it's kind of a benefit because we changed our mind like 30 times.
Somebody needs to charge their phone, hit the kitchen.
Boom. I mean, we got outlets for outlets. But the thing I would do different for anybody taking on a kitchen is you need a kitchen person. You need a chef. You need somebody like with the education, the background, the food costs.
Yeah.
The
menu design.
Yeah. And, like the whole thing, man. Like, I don't even know what I'm talking about right now, but you need that person. And that person, you know, that like air quotes that person.
Right.
That's a lot of the whole project. Whatever it is that you're trying to, whatever puzzle you're trying to figure out, you need that person.
Yeah.
You need their expertise. You need their foresight. Yeah. You need to know their mistakes.
Yeah.
Everything.
Yeah. It's very true.
So that was definitely something I would bring in our scenario, like a kitchen expert earlier, prior to all the outlets, like just at the very beginning, like have them talk to the architect.
Yeah, you'd add half the outlets,
half
at best.
Yeah.
Before we move on, let's crack open another one.
All right.
Where do you think we should go?
Yeah, get after this one. So this is a smoke show. Mm-hmm. This is our stout. Okay, so this is 4.2% dry Irish stout, 23 IBUs. So every time I talk to people about stouts, I get like cringy vibes. Everyone's like, "Oh, stout, like it's thick,
right?
It's heavy." Yeah, those are the two descriptors I hear most often. It was like, okay, well, clearly people do not like thick and they don't like heavy,
right?
And what they mean by heavy is it doesn't weigh a million pounds. It's just like the mouth feel or the ABV,
right? Barrel aged
is high,
yeah. Especially around here, we've grown up with Firestone,
yeah.
And when you think of a Firestone stout, you're thinking barrel aged, sticky.
You get a hammer, yeah. I mean, it's not like it's not good. Is good.
Sure, but you just don't want it on a normal everyday outing.
Or I would say, yeah, like the everyday consumer.
Mm-hmm.
They're not looking for that. They're looking for something, I think, that's just like approachable.
Especially when you're driving.
A key. Yes. Yeah. Like, let's consider things like that, please. Yeah. Yeah. Like, yeah, you don't, 14%. I mean, if color's not available or whatever, like don't even bother with that, man. Right. That's not your jam right now.
Yeah.
You're not going to be able to enjoy it all, like a glass of it, or maybe if you really like it too. It's not going to work.
Mm-hmm.
So for us, we said, hey, let's do a light bodied, low ABV stout. And like, let's get some non-stout drinkers to convert.
Yeah.
And try it out. And we achieved that. We didn't use high protein malts. We didn't use like wheat or oats or things that would like, you know, thicken up the viscosity of it. And we kept the ABV down and we're happy with it. I think the future of this beer could potentially be nitro or some, you know, some variant of it.
Mm-hmm.
But right now we're stoked with where it's at. And I commonly see people get it in a flight and then order a pint because like that was
like the beer ultimate compliment.
Yes. Yeah. And it's the beer. It's probably next to the Java Bump. It's probably the beer that surprised them the most.
Mm-hmm.
As far as like what they anticipated it being and then what they experienced.
Yeah. It's very easy to drink. I get a lot of like roasty, a little bit of coffee, a little bit of chocolate on the nose and the flavor not far behind. And like you said, very thin, not a protein shake by any stretch. 4.2?
Mm-hmm.
Easy drinking.
Yeah.
I appreciate the easy drinking beers. There's a brewery that will go unmentioned that has since closed down in our area that we didn't go to because all their beers were 7+.
Mm.
And it's like, hey, man, I want to go have a couple or three
yeah,
and then drive home. If I go safely. Have a couple or three of your 7.5%+ beers all day, it's not happening.
No.
So I can appreciate a bunch of sessionable beers.
Yeah. And like a long time ago, we were like, hey, because people would ask like, oh, what kind of beers are you like at festivals?
Yeah.
Like, what kind of beers are you going to make? It's like, I would always.
Hazies.
Like half jokingly, I'd be like, I want to make beers that people drink.
Right.
And like, and that wasn't like supposed to be like a, you know, a burn or a diss on the person. Like, obviously sure. We want to make beer that people drink, but I meant like drink more than one. Like, so.
Yeah. You're in the business of selling beer.
Thank you. Yeah. Like, please drink more than one.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you can't, well then, you know, mission fail.
Mm-hmm. And at 4.2, it's not lacking anything. It's not like, oh, I wish I had a little more whatever. It's not lacking anything.
I mean, up close or across the table, like,
yeah.
This looks like a stout.
Exactly.
I mean, after you pour it, it's got like, you know, kind of a slightly brown head on it.
Yeah, a little bit of lacing left over.
Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, black or close to opaque black, you know, and as it looks, it's like, what is that? That's a stout.
Yeah.
It looks what just it like
be.
It.
Yeah.
Just like it.
All right, let's go back. Let's go way back.
Mm.
History for you as a drinker. Where did it all begin? Were you like PBR guy in college or high school or
like, here's what I'll say. I actually did not have a drink till I was 21.
Okay.
And but after that,
that's on the record.
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah, on the record. I was so worried about getting hired on the fire department. Like I couldn't I couldn't mess it up for a beer at that point.
Like,
it wasn't worth it.
Yeah.
There's going to be plenty of beer drinking time after that. Like, and then look at me now. It's like,
right.
You know, we have 1,000 gallons
making up for lost
Mexican
time.
Lager, like 100 feet away from us. Like Jesus. I think like most people, in this space or like a story most people can relate to, I was having a great time with beer. Mixed drinks were just like too much for me.
Yeah.
You know,
sweet.
Like Long Island, it was like, oof, I'm on my back. Like,
yeah.
What happened?
Next morning's never good.
Yeah. And wine was cool. I appreciate wine. And we have wine here at the brewery.
Oh, smart.
Which was like a joint, just like a lot of people wanted to have wine here. So, and since we had the kitchen, like in your licensing, now you can have wine. We have a great sommelier. His name's Bryce. He lives in town. Highly educated, knowledgeable guy about wine. So hit the joke that we have is like, he's going to turn this place into a wine bar. That's like his challenge, like challenge accepted. Like if you can do that, great.
Yeah. Like whatever sells.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so he's all about the wine. He comes in, does staff orientation, education. It's great.
Oh, like,
we,
awesome.
We love the guy. He's awesome. But ultimately I started homebrewing probably. Oh, so funny story. My brother and I used to do amateur road racing, like on racetracks with motorcycles, like you're dragging your knee on the ground.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff. And so I did that for a while, like maybe like 5 years. And I ended up getting into connecting up with a school and flying around the country and riding motorcycles at racetracks and teaching, ended up, you know, instructing people. What a fun time. Like,
I bet.
Oh man. It was like the closest to a professional motorcycle racer I could get. And so that was great. Well, I'm in Virginia. At Virginia International Raceway, if anybody's ever been there. And it's a bitchin' track.
Okay.
And Elizabeth called me. She's like, hey, my water broke. I'm like,
uh-oh.
I thought we talked about this. Like, while I'm gone, like, please don't have this baby. So I fly, you know, end up getting home. I end up making it. Olivia's born in 2013.
Okay.
And I talked to my brother, who already had a kid at the time. And I go, hey, we can't go to the racetrack all weekend and do this anymore.
Right.
Like, what can we do at home that's, you know, just as fun, but not taking up as much time and it's not taking us out of the house? We end up coming up with homebrewing and then, you know, 2013-ish.
Yeah, just as expensive too.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
I mean, like, what are we doing here? Yeah. We got a $5,000 like beer kit right. In the garage. So that's kind of where it went after was, hey, we're gonna make some beer. At home. And so that's where it started for us was kind of like homebrewing. You know, that obviously got out of control like shortly thereafter.
Clearly.
Yeah. Here we are.
Was there a specific beer that you're like, fuck, this is so good. I hope I can make something like this.
So I think the first beer that hit that wasn't like completely infected.
Just like, making sours from the start.
Was a black IPA.
Oh, fuck yeah.
We were like, dude, what is this right now? Like, I like
so underrated.
you can't buy it.
No.
Like, not, I mean, you're not going to Vaughn's or Rouse right. or Albertsons and you're like, oh yeah, there's a black IPA on the shelf. Like, you're getting that from a brewery for mm-hmm. sure. And that was one of the first beers that hit, and we were like, dude, hey, all right. Like, yeah. We could drink all this yeah. keg.
Guess what? Doesn't suck.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. Oh, black IPAs are so good. And then between home brewing and then now, did you go get any training? Did you?
Yeah.
On the job?
So I went to the American Brewers Guild in Vermont. They okay. have a brewing science and engineering program. And it was like a 6-month online thing. Then you do a 10-day stint where you go out there and you do a hands-on. They have a classroom portion, but that wasn't going to be feasible, like from California.
Sure.
And with my job, I wasn't going to be able to go out there for 4 months and just do, you know, 4 days a week right. at the brewery. Like, that wasn't going to work. So we did the online program and went out there and met probably 5 or 6 guys I talked to like on a weekly basis still that are in the beer business, own breweries, are brewers, whatever. So that program, like, thank God for that program, by the way. Steve is the guy who runs the American Brewers Guild. And that is like, for us, if I didn't have that, this thing for sure, like we would have made some really bad decisions, really bad decisions
yeah.
earlier on, and it wouldn't have made it. We wouldn't have crossed the finish line. But they also had a business planning thing for people who are interested in owning breweries.
Oh.
And so they hooked us up with a small business association, like put us in contact, like, hey, if you don't know how to write a business plan, contact these people.
Right.
Their job is to help you write business plans.
Yeah.
And that worked. Like, you know, we got some guidance, and I did a podcast actually with our guy Paul here locally at College of the Canyons, and he helped us get through our business plan and asked us some like really hard questions we didn't know the answers to, and kind of thought he was being a jerk to us, but he wasn't. It was like, no, you really need to like look into this
stuff. Man. You got
to
figure it
yeah,
out.
You should yeah. really put some time into this.
Right.
And he was right.
Yeah.
So
he's a jerk, but he's a right jerk.
Yeah, yeah. And he was at the grand opening, like, that's dude, awesome. I think, like, way to go, man. Like, you know, you answered the hard questions, and you figured it out, you made it to the end, and like, good job.
Is this the first commercial brew system you've brewed on?
No.
Oh.
I brewed on 5 and 10 barrel systems, and I got to brew at a couple 15 or 20 barrel systems.
Okay.
With help.
Sure.
And, yeah, but this is the first, like, you know, I wasn't asking for help
right.
while I was brewing. Like, this is the first one for sure.
And how much can you put out on the system?
Oh, annually. So we have 30 barrel fermenters.
Okay.
So I think we did, like, if you did ales all year and you turned them, we do 750 barrels per fermenter.
Okay.
Okay. So that's, we've had a couple of drinks. Right. 750
times how many? 5?
4.
Oh, 4.
Well, at least times 2. Yeah. That's not, or 4, 15.
I'll cut this part out. It's 29, right?
It's around 3,000 barrels.
Yeah.
15. Yeah. 50. Yeah.
Yeah.
3,000 annually. And then you throw the lagers in there, they interrupt the flow. But basically, we, like, if we turned them all the time, we'd be around like 3,000 barrels annually.
Okay. And it looks like you have a little bit of room if you ever needed to expand.
I think we could put in maybe
one or two more. Yeah.
2 to 3 more.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, and we have the height.
Yeah. So, and then some.
We could do a 60 barrel in here,
yeah,
and still be fine.
Yeah, pretty tall grocery store ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Might I say, good job putting soundproofing in the ceiling
mm-hmm.
and yeah, not leaving it like yeah. a yeah. That's the worst when it sounds like a grocery store.
Yeah,
yeah, just echoing. All right, what is your focus? Speaking of all this beer making, what's your focus when it comes to beer making? I mean, obviously, stuff people are going to drink, so it sells. But like, are you leaning towards classics? Is it what's cool and hip and cold IPA bullshit?
I'm new to the beer space, like, obviously.
Yeah.
The things that I personally am focusing on right now are just being able to consistently do the same thing. I would say, like, our Proby, the Blonde Ale, like, that beer I've made probably, like, 5 or 6 times, which isn't a lot.
Sure.
But I would say throughout those 5 or 6 times, the variance has been pretty, like, narrow. And we've been able to make that beer taste the same, most of the time.
Yeah.
I made it, the place where it's kind of like changed a little bit was when I brewed it on our system, which was like 5 barrels larger than the 10 barrel that I was making it on. and the efficiency level is different.
Sure.
So we're at like 80-90% efficiency.
Wow,
which is pretty good for the for a commercial brew house. That changed the flavor. Like all of a sudden there was a little bit more alcohol in there with the same amount of grain. So I was like, wait a minute, what happened?
Yeah.
So consistency is kind of like my personal main focus. And then just drinkability / approachability, being in like a new area and introducing ourselves to the community. A lot of the people that come in here are between like 30 and 70.
a little bit of a range.
Yeah, it's really remarkable how many potential grandmas and grandpas are in here like having beers. They're not trying to get blown away by an 18% pastry stout or whatever, you know. They're having a good time like with whoever they're with, and they're having one, maybe two beers. So I think approachability, drinkability, and you know, if this was like a target or like a range, we're just trying to hit it in the middle. Does the West Coast IPA taste like traditional classic West Coast IPA? Yes or no?
Right.
And that, so we're just trying to get the yeses on most of them. And
before you get too crazy.
Yeah. So where we want to get like a little outside the lines and like, you know, is with collaborations.
Yeah.
So we're going to do a sour, like an imperial sour, heavily fruited, like 9%.
I'm in.
Yep. So that's kind of where I think, you know, I'm going to have the opportunity to like learn how to make a kettle sour with all this fruit in it. And what is that going to do to the equipment? It's probably going to be a disaster. But
how many lines am I going to have to change?
Yeah. So that kind of is going to be like the where we color outside the lines a little bit and like try some different stuff. It's probably going to be in that collaborative setting.
Smart.
Where I have like, you know,
the people have done
the handler, you know, like somebody like reel me in a little bit. Like, no, actually, you don't want to do that.
Right. That's smart. Is there a hop that you're currently crushing on?
No, oh, dude, my favorite hop is Idaho 7.
It's a good one.
That's in our hazy.
Using so many things.
You can. Yeah, you can. I just heard somebody say last night on YouTube that they were using 5% of their hop ingredients was Idaho 7 in like a Pilsner.
Oh.
And they were saying like, it's such a small amount. It doesn't really like, you don't drink it and you're like, oh, this is Idaho 7. It brightens up the existing hops that are in there just a little bit. And I was like, wow, that's really... But okay. Another like take on, you know, a Czech Pilsner or whatever.
Right.
So
add a little something to it. Do you have any dream collaborations you're hoping to?
Oof, dream collaboration. I'm actually just surprised anytime I like float it out to anybody and they're like, yeah, we'd be interested in that. I'm like, really? You know, like, so I don't really have any dream collaborations, but a dream for a collaboration would be anything that made it into like regular production or even like distribution, you know, that we could like continue to remake as our own or whatever, as long as like the other people were good with it. Anything that would become like a mainstay, like that we just had such a response on, like, oh man, we do not run out of this, please.
We're not coming back if you don't make more.
Yeah, that would be a dream for a collaboration.
Is there a next step for Red Engine now that you're open? Like, what do you...
So year one is like, let's just make it to the end of year one.
Sure.
The future for us, we want to kind of do like a hub and spoke model, like where we like maybe have two or three, you know, in a perfect world, two or three tap rooms and we can service them here from like kind of the, you know, the main or the only location that has a brewery and kind of like dish to ourselves. You know, like we defined success earlier as we had three goals that we wanted to We wanted to be in control of our own schedule. We wanted to get paid what we were worth. That's not a number. Mm-hmm. That's like what the people essentially tell you, like how much of it they're going to buy.
Okay.
And how much of it you can sell.
Yeah.
And then eventually how much you can pay yourself.
Sure.
So whatever that number is. And hopefully that number like, you know, moves up like along the way. And then we just wanted to reduce exposure to like all sorts of anything, but mainly I think that line means like just be in control of your future. So the dream is like those things, and then being able to go into like a convenience store or a grocery store and see your stuff on a shelf.
Yeah.
Like that's the definition of success for us. If we can achieve those three things and see the product on the shelf or be in like grocery store line, somebody's got a 4-pack in front of you, it'd be like, man, dude, I'm like, dude, I'm gonna buy that 4-pack for that guy. Like what? Thank you.
Is that when you just start dropping those little like, yeah, it's a good choice right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, yeah. Oh yeah. All day long.
Oh,
all day long.
I've heard of that place. Yeah. Let me know how it is. Yeah. That's pretty good. And any upcoming events, any tap room events or anything like that?
So when this comes out, I think the big thing for us is going to be we're going to start doing trivia on Wednesday nights. We're going to work with King Trivia and get them out here. And hopefully
you might find us.
Yeah, we might see you guys, you know, routinely. St. Patrick's Day is a big day for fire departments all over the country. Oh. So we might be doing some green beer or some kilts and bagpipes or something like that. And then
some haggis.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then I think during the summer, we will definitely have some new beers come out, or we want to schedule some collaborations to happen in the summertime, you know, when beer drinking is peaking.
Right. Peak beer season.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that.
Yeah.
All right. Before the last thing I'm going to do is wrap it up with some rapid fire questions.
Do we want to get this last one?
Yeah. I was going to say, but before we get to the rapid fire,
okay.
Let's get to that last beer.
Okay. Boom. Here we go.
What do we got?
So this is the Proby, our blonde ale. I would say like the beer that kind of like we started with and we've made the most of. This beer, we talked about it a little bit with the Java bump with the kind of our coffee beer. This is 5.5%, 23 IBUs. It's golden, clear, has a little floral bouquet in it.
Mm-hmm.
Funny story about the hops in this beer is we went to, the hop is Styrian Wolf.
Okay.
I had bought a piece of brewing equipment from a brewery that was unfortunately closing a couple years ago. And when we were leaving, I saw like in their walk-in, they had like, I don't know how many bags of this stuff. I mean, they had a lot, like, you know, maybe like 70 pounds of this hop.
Overdid their contract a little bit?
Yeah. Well, I don't know how they were using it, but they had a crap ton of it.
Well, it sounds like they weren't.
Yeah. Well, and I was like, hey, what's going on with this, this thing over here? And they're like, man, if you want it, like, you know, we'll give you a good deal on it. You're buying some other equipment. Like,
yeah,
take it.
Yeah. As long as it's not 5 years old.
Yeah. And it wasn't. And so I was like, okay. So we ended up taking it, and that was the hop that ended up going into this blonde, because we just I had a bunch of it. Right. I was like, hey, let's try it out. You look at the descriptors and you're like, okay, yeah, this is gonna fit in this style.
Yeah.
And then we're still using it, you know.
It's easy to get. It's not a super expensive hop.
It's not super expensive.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
I was probably most surprised when we were here the first time with two beers, really. This one and then the El Jefe.
Mm.
I told you the night of industry night, I am not a Mexican lager fan because usually they're too sweet and corn forward for me. Yours is not. I appreciate it's more like drinking a Pacifico in the best way possible. And this one is like boat beer to a tea. I want these in a cooler when I'm wakeboarding. Yeah. It's so easy to crush.
So we started bringing this beer to like beer festivals.
Yeah.
And it was funny because like the lager folks, like we didn't have the lager, but we're like, or a lager at the time. We're like, hey, well, why don't you try this blonde? It's like lager adjacent. Like you might be good for you.
Right.
And all of a sudden they're coming back like, hey, can I get another hit on this blonde? And like that was a compliment like from a lager drinker. Like, you know, so
you're coming back for more.
Yeah. And we've had fun making it. It has got like a funny little history behind it. I think it's definitely put us on the map. Like people have appreciated it. It's been good. It's been good. We want to keep making more of it for sure. And the Mexican lager, we got 30 barrels that we're going to keg next Monday. So we're sold out of it currently. I had no idea that beer was going to move that fast. I was
good.
Like really caught off guard. And then with the you can't catch up on a lager. You're 6 to 8 weeks out on that thing. Like for sure. Yeah. That beer's been successful here. Both of these beers have been like front runners you know, for us. So
it's good. It's you know, it hits that 805 spot, you know, perfectly.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of people locally are like, yeah, that's in their wheelhouse.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure.
And it's one of those I always tell people like 805 is like the Budweiser of craft in the nicest way possible. No one's gonna hate it, you know? Like it's just it's good, you can drink whenever. This takes no one's gonna be mad. It's, you know, if you have hop heads, they're not gonna be like, this is awful. If you have people who hate hops, they're not gonna, you know, turn away from this.
Yeah, it's right in the middle.
Yeah.
It's right in the middle. And yeah, if you can't drink IPAs like forever, you're gonna if you're not alternating to water, this is like a good alternative.
Yeah.
Like alternate into this blonde for a minute and then, you know, get back on those palate punchers and
yeah, cleanse the palate. All right. We're going to wrap things up with rapid fire questions.
Go.
First thing that comes to your mind, don't think about it too long.
Okay.
Don't read ahead.
Okay.
What's the first beer you ever drank?
Coors Light.
What's the first beer you brewed?
I think it was an amber ale.
Okay. Do you have a favorite style to brew?
I would say this favorite style is a hazy.
Okay.
To brew.
Cans or bottles?
Cans.
Favorite food and beer pairing?
Spicy and IPAs.
All right. It's Wednesday night. What are you drinking?
This blonde ale.
What is your beercation destination?
Probably Colorado, you know, somewhere there.
What's your favorite outside, so non-red engine beer?
I love Mia Made West Pale.
Class. It's the best pale around.
I don't know how those guys do that. This is delicious.
What's your favorite non-beer hobby?
Motorcycles.
Cold IPA or IPL?
Is this a trick question? A
little bit.
Cold IPA.
Okay. Favorite guilty pleasure beer? This is where we find out that you love like PBR or something.
I know. I love the sours, like for sure.
Favorite hangover cure?
Advil.
And what's your favorite word or slang for being drunk?
Fuck, I'm drunk.
Perfect. Preston, thank you so much for hanging out today. If you guys are in the area, it's 803 Ventura Street in Fillmore. Red Engine Brewing on the socials, redenginebrewing.com, and the Built and Brewed podcast.
Give it a listen.
Go give it a listen, especially if you're going to open up a brewery or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Have I missed anything?
This is it, man. That was a good like coverage. Like, great job.
Thanks
for taking me on this journey.
Absolutely. Thanks for coming along, and everybody come drink some beer.
Cheers.
Cheers.